Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Hello and welcome to episode 94 of the UK Tech Weekly Podcast, the podcast with more bite than Luis Suarez.
Excellent.
Do you like that? My football references are a little bit out of date. do you want to do one?
No.
I thought I should do something to do with that Brazilian man who rolls over a lot.
Yeah.
But anyway, forget that.
Get this rolling like Neymar, maybe.
Nice, there you go.
See.
In this podcast, you will be listening to noises coming out of the heads of Scott Carey.
Hi.
You can say
something.
I
thought you were going to do job titles, but fine.
No. Sean Bradley.
Hello.
Dominic Preston.
Hi.
And me, David Price. We're going to be talking about Netflix and Fortnite, so let's get started. Scott Carey, you're interested in talking about Netflix today, apropos some insights that have come out about the programming decisions that are made at Netflix at the moment, the broadcasting sort of plans.
Yeah, so in short, Vulture basically got to embed a journalist with Netflix for what seems like a decent amount of time. For the first time, it was Joseph Adalian, who is their West Coast TV editor. And there's just tons. It's 10,000 words, but there's just tons of great little nuggets in there about sort of how Netflix runs its business, how it sort of selects content, how it decides which content to keep running and which to cancel, and how it deals with talent as well. So how it deals with showrunners and a lot of the sort of decision making that it makes. And there was some interesting stuff in there about how they use data as well, because it's always been renowned for being, you know, the most data driven organization in the valley.
Yeah. So there's a lot to sort of pick over. I think the thing you picked out first of all, and the one, yeah, I agree, is the most interesting, is the idea that the decisions they make are more about instinct than they are about data. That they're trying to downplay this algorithmic side of what they do, and sort of, I think what they said was that data only tells you what's happened in the past, and it can't tell you what's going to happen in the future. And also, if you base everything purely on data, you end up making the same thing over and over again.
Yeah, so it's interesting that for nerds like us, that's the most interesting part. There's definitely more interesting stuff in there regarding, you know, actual content. But yeah, I did think there was one quote in there in particular. I can't remember whether it was from Sarandos or not, but it basically said every decision they make is 70% gut, 30% data. And I very much thought it would be the other way around.
Yeah.
But that can't be right, can it? I mean, I was thinking they've got a real motive to lie about that, haven't they?
Yeah, so that is the one caveat I did want to say about this article, is that because they've obviously granted Vulture all of this access, it's going to be very much to Netflix's control. So everything that was said or seen was under their control. So it's going to paint a positive portrait of Netflix, but that doesn't take away from the fact that it gives some sort of insight into how they run their day-to-day business.
But they don't want it to seem robotic, do they? They want to suggest that it's an artistic project that they're working on, rather than just crunching the numbers.
Yeah,
like a lot of people found, well, firstly, people find it sort of creepy and intrusive, the amount of data that they are clearly harvesting, regardless of what they say, but also it's just the idea that we don't like to think of ourselves as just a collection of demographic numbers. We like to think that there is something.
Yeah, that was one of the interesting insights, was what they consider a useful metric, and there was a few in there that you maybe wouldn't think, but on that side, you know, the like categorizing of viewers. They do it in a slightly different way to maybe the way that networks used to. So networks would always group people in these broad sort of ABC demographics of sort of age, gender, maybe location. But Netflix has something along the lines of 500 taste clusters. And
I love having them for breakfast.
Yes. because they found that obviously your propensity to watch maybe sci-fi to then lead you to watch something that is, I think the example they use is if you watch Lost, then your propensity to watch something like Westworld, which yep. isn't a Netflix show, but it's another mystery box show, or something like the German made Dark, which mm-hmm. maybe no one would have heard of, but if you can put it in front of someone that has a propensity for mystery shows like Lost, then that's the way you're going to get them in. And that's always been the way they've done things with their algorithm, is that whole you liked this, you're going to like yep. this kind of thing, which we take for granted now, but was quite innovative at the time.
Do you think it works? Do you find, I mean, I'm sort of interested in how everybody thinks about yeah. this. Do you think that they can actually, because the things they recommend for me, a lot of the time, I just have no interest in at all.
Yeah, I agree. I take most of my recommendations from human beings.
Mm-hmm. I find it mostly does all right for me, with the caveat that it obviously pushes its own content too hard. So you can spot the sort of, if there's something that's in my recommended bit that doesn't seem right, that normally means it's something that's actually a Netflix original, that they're clearly just, the algorithm's pushing a little bit too hard and it's actually not quite the right taste profile for me.
Yeah.
But they really want me to see it because they made it.
Basically.
But the stuff that sort of other films or TV shows that it pops up for me, I actually find often they are things that I already am interested in because I've heard about them before. Or...
Yeah.
What about you, Sean?
Oh, like, yeah, you also probably remember the times when it recommends something that you do like and you think, wow, that's clever. How cool is that? Compared to, you know, you might have sort of glossed over five or six shows it has recommended that you just dismissed out of hand.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I mean, it's super interesting that, you know, it's being boiled down that much. I listened to a podcast where the comedian Bill Burr, who obviously has Netflix specials and also does F is for Family, he said that he, you know, attended a meeting at Netflix and he was just completely blown away. He sort of thought he joked that he might not be allowed to leave after he'd just been given all that information, because it was just so like there's so. They're just, there's no water rolling off the table, right? When they're catching every tiny bit of data that they can get.
Oh, that's really interesting that is the case, because in the piece, Eric Newman, who made Bright, that Will Smith movie yep. that's on Netflix, and he made Narcos as well. He was a showrunner for Narcos, so he's very much a Netflix sort of favored collaborator. There's a quote here where he said, he wishes that Netflix execs were giving more data-driven feedback. So the quote is, I ask for it and never get it. I am always like, who do people like? You guys know everything. You know when someone rewatches a segment of a show where people turn things on or turn them off, it would be really interesting for me to know that, and they won't share it with him.
So as a creative, they don't want him making the decisions based on yes. that data.
Yeah, I wouldn't want the creatives to get that either.
No, and historically yep. Netflix won't even provide viewing figures to yep. Their creators, because they just want them to focus on
making the
show yeah. and not worrying about numbers.
That's great though, because you think it'd be yeah. so easy for them to go the other way yeah. and be like, yeah. oh, we're not going to give you another season because you only got X amount of viewers in this, and yeah. this is why you're terrible. You know, whereas, you know, if they can, you know, if then like creators are removed outside of the sort of corporate sphere to some extent, yeah. then they can just sort of be a bit more.
And I think that's how they've recruited the best showrunners. So, what's her name from ABC that they just recently got? Did Scandal and things like that.
Shonda Rhimes.
So Shonda Rhimes is quoted in the piece as saying that one of the reasons I loved the deal that Netflix offered me, apart from the millions and millions of dollars, but she was getting millions of dollars from ABC yeah. anyway, was yeah. that it was less pressure. She doesn't have to worry about Nielsen ratings and, yeah. you know, day one, like how many people are viewing it during prime yeah. time. She yeah. just gets to go out and do her thing.
And to be fair, I think to some extent that's similar across these kind of platforms, because I remember, although the show itself was absolutely awful, when Woody Allen made his series for Amazon, he was very vocal about the fact that they never gave him very strong guidelines at all on episode count, structure, what it had to be about, what kind of figures it needed to get. They just said, no, we just want a Woody Allen TV show. Go and make us yeah. a TV show, and we'll whatever it is, we'll put it out there and help it find its audience. We just want you to go make the show.
Yeah.
This brings up to a more general point, is that there doesn't seem to be the same fear of failure, particularly with mm-hmm. Netflix, seemingly because it has a bottomless well of cash.
It is because of the bottomless well of cash.
But it's a real contradiction that they have, on the one hand, this very sort of tight control that they want exactly what they want. You know, they look and they think, well, we want something with Kevin Spacey and something with David Fincher, and you know, they've worked all in all the data out. But then once it's actually being made, then they have this, I suppose, admirable quality of, yeah, hands off and you go for it, and we're not going to tell you the data, which is
more along those lines. What they definitely do in terms of using their data is they see like big brush genres that they feel that they should get more into. So they never had much interest in doing stand-up comedy, but they started running a few stand-up comedy specials, and now they run tons of them because they do extremely well, and they cost nothing to make. They only have to pay the creative, and that's it. You know, it's not big budget TV, and it does really, really well for them. And similar for their like documentary output
and their cooking shows and stuff like that. You can see that's like ramping up at the moment. They've clear reels from Chef's Table and stuff. They can put out a cooking show for next to no money, and it will be very big.
Yeah, so that's the sort of insight that they do have over others that are kind of poking around in the dark, really, and just guessing that this is popular because of ratings or because of cultural criticism or whatever.
Yeah, it's interesting just to see that sort of like the fact that Netflix has that variety of showrunners that are allowed to fail. If you watch something like that's made by the BBC, for example, things can vary quite a lot. But I feel like if you watch a BBC show, if you don't know it's a BBC show, you can tell in about 5 minutes just by the way it's shot, by the production values, by everything behind it. Doesn't necessarily mean it's bad, but it means that every time there's a new BBC series out, you sort of know what you're going to expect, right? Yep. Whereas with like Netflix, there's because there is that room to fail, it can be completely terrible, like Iron Fist, where you know, or it can be something really, really good.
One of my favourite anecdotes in this piece was when Netflix got it horribly wrong. At the beginning of this year, all of their data basically said that the show The End of the Effing World, which is a British Channel 4 originally, comedy, dark comedy by Charlie Coble. Basically, all of their data said bury it. You know, we'll buy it for a small amount, bury it. It might get a little bit of a cult following. It was one of their most popular shows of the year so far. And they've now given Coval a sort of a blank check to make another show for them.
Oh, really? I didn't know.
Yeah, it sounds really good, actually. It's what was it? It's in here somewhere. It's about Greek mythology. And it's like a modern retelling of the Greek myths.
Because that was a great show. It was, I mean, that was a weird one where I got to from word of mouth. It was the only recommendation I've ever taken from my 16-year-old sister on what I should watch. But she absolutely insisted and just persisted and badgered me into watching it. And I came around and I was like, that's absolutely fantastic.
It's amazing how well shows that drop around Christmas and New Year's do, because there's a lot of people sitting around watching Netflix.
Yep.
And that was the Making the Murderer thing as well.
Yeah.
Oh, I love Making the Murderer.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I wish they had more of that sort of thing.
I know.
Well, they've been trying.
Did
you see, the case is ongoing, so it's a bit complicated.
Did you see the American Vandal one, the parody?
Yeah, I did, yeah.
I think that was another one.
That said Sir Andos didn't think was going to be good.
He didn't actually want to greenlight it at all, and someone badgered him enough to do it. And then it was again another huge success story for them. Sort of going back to metrics, I thought the interesting thing was that I thought that the most important metric for them would be sort of completion of a series, but it's not. It's something that they call survivorship, which is basically did people who started watching an episode finish that episode? That's the thing that they really, really rate as a metric. And that actually is the reason they gave for cancelling a lot of shows that people thought shouldn't have been cancelled, like Lady Dynamite, not a show I watched, but one that a lot of people liked. There was The OA, which got cancelled, which was like a sci-fi show.
I quite like that.
I hated The OA.
Yeah, a friend of mine's a big OA stan, like, you know. But like that was one of the big problems, was that people weren't finishing episodes, and that's something they don't like.
How close did the end you have to get for it to qualify as finishing?
I think you've got to finish it.
I suspect what they care about in part is that you hit the point where it says next episode starts in 5, 4, 3.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, I feel like if you turn off in the middle of an episode, maybe it's just me, but I almost always watch films, episodes, whatever, right to the end. I have to turn something off in the middle, it's got to be I've got to really lose
interest,
focus on it, which is quite hard, like when it comes to something I've picked.
That used to be the case for me, but since I had kids and now I only get a certain number of hours each night, that's just for me.
So you're the anomaly. You're the fly in the ointment in terms of the stats.
Ruining Netflix's day to day,
I decided to watch
Sons
of Anarchy because I heard it was good.
Yeah.
And I was like, halfway through the first episode, I was like, this is just not worth my precious time.
It's a slow burn. That's the end of that.
Yeah. I'm going to watch the Bill Burr stand-up special yet again because at least I know what I'm getting with that.
Yeah,
but then that's exactly it. That's what they want to know, that you, in fact, you didn't even bother to finish an episode. It's not like you're saying you paused it halfway to come back. It's sort of you stopped halfway and said, no, this isn't even worth me finishing the 40 minutes I'm pre-committed to it.
So do you think they do have a bottomless pit of cash, or is there a point at which they're going to suddenly say, right, expansion phase is over, we now need to start monetizing properly and have a plan?
Yeah, they absolutely have to at some point, but I don't think it's as soon as you would think. I think they could keep doing this for a best part of a decade. The 2020 point obviously is arbitrary, but that is the point where I think they will reassess. There's rumors that, well, a lot of analysts basically say that they could hit 200 million subscribers by 2020, which would definitely be a sort of a tipping point for them. They've already put their prices up a little bit this year or last year. To try and monetize people, and I'm not sure that we will always have the four device situation that we have at the moment. But I definitely think the strategy is absolutely entrenched at the company, is spend, build up a like catalog of content, keep growing the user numbers equals profit, basically. and that budget, that 8 billion a year content budget they have currently, will come down eventually. But it's not going to completely disappear because they're going to keep producing content and keep adding it to their library.
And the more they spend making content, the less they have to spend buying content,
which
is going to be even more important as we see all the other big players trying to make their own streaming platforms. Disney, obviously.
Disney's the elephant in the room.
But, you know, like DC Comics through Warner Brothers just announced a special, like, you know, DC Comics exclusive streaming platform and things like that. So more and more other companies are going to not want to sell their movies and TV shows to Netflix. So it's going to be more and more important that Netflix has its own library of content.
Yeah, because Disney and Fox are going to they're going to pull their stuff off Netflix, and Netflix need more of their own stuff to replace that sort of content gap.
Do you think Netflix has been a good thing in terms of television overall?
Yeah.
I think it's an inevitability.
Yeah, I think the biggest... I don't know if you've all seen The Punisher, the recent series, but that, for me, is the first time that it's not really a show that's split into 10, 12 parts. It's almost like a 12-hour film that's just broken up. I mean, it's not episodic.
It's like a 12-hour comic book film.
Comic book.
You're like describing my hell.
I won't rant about how good it is, but it really is incredible. I mean, it's sort of issue with films and why so films get pacing wrong so much of the time. It's because if you've got to shove a story into 2 hours, it's quite easy to screw that up to some extent. But if you've got like 12 episodes, there's enough room for scenes with a lot of action and a lot of character development that you can really kind of move through. And in the way that, because it's, again, it's really like a long film, you don't have to worry about the sort of episodic formula where at the start there's a premise that you're interested in at the start of the 40 minutes that then gets resolved at the end with a cliffhanger that keeps you tied on for the next one. If it's more built up like a film, then there's some slight elements of that, but it's, you know, it's more like a long story cut up as opposed to several little stories that have like a thread running through them, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it was the same with Godless. I don't know if anyone watched Godless, but it definitely had room to breathe, even though it was I think 10-part show. It had the room to be a bit more like a hybrid of a movie and a TV show, and you'll see a lot more stuff of that style. But to answer your question, David, I definitely think that, like, just because of the internet and because of streaming video, like, something like Netflix was an inevitability. It's just the fact that it is Netflix now, but like YouTube would have been there, or it would have been Amazon Video, or like, that is just the change in consumer habit, and Netflix are just filling it. It might have been, it's kind of chicken or egg, but that's the way I see it.
I was wondering if they were going to make programs that you wouldn't see otherwise. Like, I was wondering if there would be more good content, or the existing content would be better than before, and I don't see how it can be. That's sort of what is going in my head, because there is an existing number of talented people around, an existing number of talented actors. And it's like when you have more channels and it just gets spread more thinly.
I'd say there is some shift, though, in that I think freed from the constraints of the networks and the network systems, worrying about what type of show goes on what night and which time slot and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's been a big boost to things like genre.
Yeah.
So much more sci-fi and fantasy and comic book stuff can come out of a place like Netflix. And things we were saying, like cooking shows that aren't just built for the daytime TV crowd, but are built for evening viewers. Stand-up stuff, like we were saying earlier. All these kind of arguably more niche propositions that indie would movies. Struggle in
indie movies could have very easily gone the way of the dinosaur and under the current model because there's not enough people going to the cinema to watch them.
But the cinema Netflix industry can't support indie films anymore, but Netflix can.
Yeah, so there's a lot more indie films on streaming platforms than there possibly would have been if we were still relying on cinemas.
I mean, I think you just got to think about the kind of things being put out. Like Netflix isn't really making those big broad sitcoms like Big Bang Theory or Roseanne, and it could be because the networks are, and the networks still think that's what they have to make the most money and find the audience. Netflix isn't trying to make that lowest common denominator stuff, at least not right now. Whether it will is a different question.
Well, you wouldn't ever expect it to have the same viewing figures for a single program that they would have got for Roseanne back in the day, because although it has approaching 200 million subscribers, they're so fragmented.
Yeah,
I don't know if it's practical to do something like that.
Like what you were referencing was like the golden age of TV, but most of that was driven by HBO anyway. So because they had the time and space and money to do it, it wasn't really driven by network television.
No,
and they could swear.
And they could show tits and dragons,
preferably at the same time.
Yes,
it's a very interesting subject. I suspect that you guys could talk about this all day.
Kind of good,
but we have to talk about something else. So we'll go around with a quick question. I don't know whether to include a rude word in this.
I said end of the effing world, but there is no reason why I can't say end of the fucking world, so.
Oh, what are we doing it? Netflix or Netflix? Netflix or get fucked?
Oh, no. Nice.
I thought you were going to Netflix or shitflix, but...
Netflix or get pricks. Suddenly we've rated our podcast.
There we go.
Let's see, Netflix or get lost. That's the polite version.
Nice, I like it.
Dom?
Netflix.
Sean?
Netflix.
Scott?
Yeah, Netflix.
We love Netflix. I am a subscriber. I do like it. After the break, we'll talk a little bit about Fortnite.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Sean Bradley, what is Fortnite and why should I care?
Well, here we go. Fortnite is the latest gaming sensation, David, to hit our shores.
It's like you're talking to your granny.
Depending on your age, you've probably heard of Fortnite from playing it yourself or from a sibling or indeed a child of yours playing it.
I've just seen the moral panics on broadsheet newspapers.
It's been a good moral panic.
Yes.
On.
Yeah. Well, you know, we look like a good moral panic, don't we? So we're all in. Fortnite is the latest sort of expansion in gaming becoming incredibly mainstream for several very, very good reasons. So, I mean, I'll start to say it's produced by Epic Games, who are a pretty well-known publisher. And Fortnite was originally produced to be a sort of four-player cooperative base building sort of zombie shooter game. So you get dropped into a world, you are with three of your friends, and you build up a base and you defend it when hordes of zombies come running at it.
With you so far.
This game was, no one really cared, to be honest. It was an interesting, it was going to have a box price. There was going to be microtransactions where you could spend money to get better weapons, and people who consider themselves gamers hate microtransactions. So people were watching this, and some people played it and they thought, okay, whatever's fine. Then the battle royale genre entered. So this sort of happened with MMORPGs about 7-8 years ago, when World of Warcraft hit the scene as an MMORPG, which is where you're dropped into...
Definitely longer ago than that.
So World of Warcraft was in 2004, but yeah. It sort of didn't really get really popular until 2008, 2009. But an MMORPG is where you're dropped into a persistent world that never changes, and you spend hundreds of hours or thousands of hours, some people, with the same character, and you level it up and you get it equipment and you interact with loads of other people all sharing this same world. Whereas, for example, a game like Call of Duty, you will jump into a game and it will end in 30 minutes and then you'll start a new one. World of Warcraft is very much a persistent, it's called an MMO, massively multiplayer online role-playing game, MMORPG. So, World of Warcraft completely blew up, and then a load of other companies started to make MMORPGs, and the market got incredibly saturated. So EA made a Star Wars one, this whole thing blew up. And the same thing is now happening with Battle Royale games. So to explain the concept of a Battle Royale game, like the film Battle Royale.
It's a good film.
100 people are dropped into an area. They can, and there's a load of different variations on this now, but they will gear themselves up with weapons and armor. And the area, as the match progresses, will slowly shrink. If you are killed off in this game, you are out completely. You don't respawn. You're out. You're done. And you go back to start another game. And so when 100 people enter the map, it goes down to one person needs to be left alive. One person wins. And the map slowly shrinks in size, and people get pushed towards together so they can fight.
I can't possibly imagine why this is highly addictive.
Yeah, so I mean, there are reasons why. So really, I think it's consequence of, in these games, death. So if you're playing a game where you respawn instantly, if you die, okay, you respawn in 5 seconds.
Yeah, the stakes are low.
Whereas if you've been, so these Battle Royale games will last sort of between, in Fortnite, it's usually sort of 20 minutes in the game like PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, which is another huge one. They can last up to 40 minutes. And so if you're in the last 10 players, you've been playing this match for 30 minutes, and if you die, that's it. It suddenly becomes very tense and the adrenaline starts to spike because you really want to win. And that's, you know, you're almost working towards something, and it's not really real consequences if you get killed, but you're winning or losing, and it means something more than if you just die instantly.
Well, it builds more of a narrative into a match for you as a player, which then is part of why it's taken off, because it builds that narrative into other people watching you play on services like Twitch and stuff. These games have all been huge on streaming because, if you're watching someone play Call of Duty and they keep dying every 30 seconds, it's harder to follow the match and the story of the match as it plays out, whereas if you're watching one person play through and they're surviving for half an hour, it's like watching a little short film of their journey through this. Yeah,
exactly.
You know,
well, if you think about it, Battle Royale was a film, but you can't imagine a film that would just be a series of people dying and then starting.
Yeah,
making sense.
That's also.
I think Saving Private Ryan with respawns.
I just think everything you said about that game like really rings true to me as someone that is borderline addicted to FIFA, because it's all of those sweet spots. It's that nice time limit of about 20 minutes, so you can squeeze a game in here and there, but you're not overly committed to it.
Yep.
You're playing against someone online, so the stakes feel high, and you're going to have a result at the end of it. So it's hugely addictive.
Yes, it is.
What are the differences between this then and the other battle royale games? Such as PUBG.
As with MMOs, PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds was the first one, and this is what really sort of brought it. There were mods for other games, so Arma 3 had a Battle Royale mode, and also there was a game called DayZ, which launched ages ago, which sort of had similar sort of persistence to your character, and when you died, you lost everything and had to start again. So PUBG, or PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, it launched officially at the end of last year, but it had been in sort of various testing phases before that. That was the first big one to arrive, but it had a number of issues. Mostly, pretty much all of the assets in the game were bought from the Steam store, so they weren't So they weren't created in-house by the developers who made the game. When I say assets, I mean things like weapon models, buildings, cars, trees, whatever they put into the game. These were made by loads of different people and then bought by the company and put into the game. This means that they're not cohesively designed to work together, which means the performance of the game. So if you're running, so you need a supercomputer to run this game effectively,
right,
which limits the barrier to entry. Also, it's got a £40 box price. Now, there are millions of people playing this game literally right now. I think PUBG averages concurrent about just over 1.1 million players on Steam at any one time.
That's ludicrous. Good numbers.
Which, I mean, Fortnite is actually blowing that out of the water right now. But so PUBG had a number of barriers of entry because of that. The engine they built the game on couldn't really handle the amount of people properly. So the netcode was a bit weird. So what I mean by that is when you're shooting at someone, on your screen, you're shooting at someone and you're seeing the bullets hit. That's not what the server thinks is happening. So you're behind the server. It's the difference between a client and server relationship. David,
lag,
essentially. You're looking confused. So
world of pain.
Yeah. So it's when like the server can't handle the amount of connections that are going to it. So it can't.
This is like my brain at the moment.
Yeah, basically.
So it can't.
I'm experiencing lag in real time.
Real time lag, brain lag.
You mentioned barriers for entry. Is age a barrier for entry? Are kids allowed to play this essentially?
So PUBG has much more of a realistic tone to it. Fortnite doesn't. Fortnite's very sort of cartoony, and there's no blood. It's very sort of it's very sort of animated. It's got a cartoony style.
It's got a very silly tone. There's lots of like costume unlocks, which are sort of colourful, silly outfits and hats, and you know, it's much more playful in tone.
I think there's been at least three. I've watched a lot of World Cup, and there's been at least three goal celebrations that have been Fortnite dances so far.
Yes.
Yeah.
Two of them by England players.
Yeah, it's up there.
Dele Alli and Lingard are both known Fortnite players. Yeah. Antoine Griezmann, Paul Pogba, all big time Fortnite.
Let me get this straight. People at the Football World Cup are imitating characters in this computer game.
Yes, dances, they score goals in front of millions of people.
Yeah, so
what a time to be alive.
What a time to be alive. Yeah, welcome to the future. We're here.
Incredible.
So Fortnite has garnered 125 million players worldwide, with 40 million logging in every month. So just let that run through your...
It's a sensation.
It's giant. Having said that, that's League of Legends at some point, which is the other huge free-to-play game, had 80 million at some point. So that was even bigger a few years ago. But Fortnite... it's also very interesting when it monetizes itself. So this Battle Royale version of Fortnite is completely free to play. If you have a computer, you can download it and play it. Literally free. You can play it. There's something called a Battle Pass, which is where you can... gated by seasons. So a season lasts about 3 months, and you can pay the equivalent of $10, and then you get yourself a Battle Pass. And the more you play the game, the more cosmetic unlocks you get. So different costumes, different dances, different silly hats, different emotes, so you can wave at people and as you're throwing grenades at them or whatever.
Can you play it on a console?
You can. And this is another big contentious issue is that Sony are playing not particularly nicely. It was found out recently that it was very easy to do cross-platform games.
Yeah.
I haven't researched this entirely, but someone literally flicked a switch and then PlayStation and Xbox players were playing together. And I think this was someone at Epic with Fortnite. But Sony doesn't want to let this happen because Sony has such a huge market lead on Microsoft in terms of console sales. So it is, but the community segmented by... You can only play with Xbox players if you're on Xbox.
I see.
Yeah. But right now, yeah, so there's now cross-play... basically between everything except the PS4, I think.
Yes,
right.
Sony aren't playing nice.
So PS4 sits on its own, but if you're on an Xbox, you can play with someone on a Switch and with someone on a PC.
Yeah, that's textbook Sony, to be honest.
And there's also, I think, probably more on the release on a Switch recently, is that correct?
Yes, it was announced. It was released on Switch at E3. It was one of those, here's Fortnite on Switch, you can download it right now and go to the eShop.
Yes, there. But if you logged into your account on the Switch and then tried to log back into it on a PS4... you weren't allowed to use it again.
I think it was that if you'd ever played it on a PS4, it wouldn't let you play on a Switch because of some weird Sony account thing. Everyone involved just pointing their fingers at Sony and saying it's Sony's fault.
Yeah.
Like, everyone else wants it to be. this has become a thing that's then spread out otherwise, because it's the same in Minecraft. Xbox and Nintendo players can play Minecraft together, but not with PS4 players. So actually, in an amazing...
Did Microsoft buy Minecraft?
Yeah. So even though Microsoft own it, they've allowed cross-play on the Switch. And in an amazing marketing coup, there is a Minecraft trailer out that ends with the Microsoft and Nintendo logos side by side and are like, you know, let's build together or something like that, in a really pointed F you at Sony.
Yeah.
Like, it's astonishing that it's got to the point.
If you're going to spend millions on it, hundreds of millions on it, then you get to do stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's true. It's true. But yeah, also Fortnite are doing some sort of interesting stuff that sets them apart from other games. So there have been a load of other battle royales that have come out since, they're trying to essentially take advantage of Fortnite's success. So Radical Heights was one that came out that was made by Bosky Studios. Weirdly enough, the other production made by Bosky Studios was a game called Lawbreakers, which tried to copy Blizzard's Overwatch. So Overwatch came out, was a huge sensation among sort of PC shooter players. Bosky Studios made Lawbreakers, which was essentially the same genre of game, called a hero shooter, and then it flopped incredibly hard. I mean, really titanically hard. It was, they'd spent years developing this game, and then they tried to compete with Overwatch and got completely crushed. They then did a 180 and tried to jump on another bandwagon, which was the Battle Royale bandwagon, where they made Radical Heights, which was a weird sort of 80s inspired, the dots are sort of weird, like 80s cultural references. To get healthy, you ate hamburgers and you were like flying around on bikes, and it was very weird, but I mean, quite silly. Yeah, Dave is loving this. He's literally seeing grimacing over the
None of you remember the 80s. I remember.
but long story short, like, why has Fortnite been so much more successful than everyone else? Is it a confluence of factors?
Yeah, so PUBG was the original. It required basically a really strong computer to run it, and even then the netcode was dodgy, so it didn't feel like good to play. It also had a £40 box price. Fortnite, free to play, runs perfectly, much more cartoony, much more accessible to kids, but still has a...
My 11-year-old cousin plays it.
Right.
Yeah.
So, like, and also...
Are they supposed to be playing it?
So this is an interesting point. It is in the UK rated 12 and above, which I only discovered the other week because the BBC did a thing on, you know, should kids be playing this game? And like proudly announced that they'd invited a load of 11-year-olds into the studio to play Minecraft. And then all the gaming journals piled on and said, oh, you know, it's a 12-rated game.
Yeah.
And it's an addictive game, and you've got 11-year-olds being sort of consciously targeted with cartoonish graphics.
But also what you were saying about the free-to-play thing, like, these cultural things are snowball effects. So as soon as you get a certain amount of people playing it, you know, you go into school the next day, everyone's talking about it. Yeah,
that's it's the craze, that is it. You know.
Yeah.
Which equally means it will burn out eventually, because it will just
be... That was my other question, is will it burn out?
Yeah.
Is it going to go the way of Pokemon Go, or has it got more legs?
I think Pokemon Go is still Pokemon going.
Yeah, but no one's playing it. Like,
not on the scale it was at launch.
I think it's still a pretty big...
It's still going, and enough for them to make money, and they keep updating and all that, but it's not like... You know, you couldn't get away from Pokemon Go when it first came out.
Yeah, there
was
like a week of...
And that's where Fortnite is now. But it won't last, because something else will come along, or people will just burn out eventually. Yeah.
The other huge contributing factor is, as Dom mentioned earlier, the influence of Twitch. Which for those of
Drake,
basically.
Drake played his part.
So Twitch, for you, those of you who don't know, is a streaming platform where you can watch people play games. Why would anyone want to watch a person play a game? Is a question I get answered a lot. I watch Twitch occasionally to relax. It's hard to explain why, but, you know, there are the same people that play every day, and it's nice to sort of relax and watch them. And if they're much better at a game than you are, perhaps, it's interesting to see how they play and they interact with their chat.
Oh, I think that's a really weird question.
It's a very weird question, because it's like,
why watch people playing cricket.
Yeah.
Right,
like,
okay.
Why do you play cricket yourself? Well, because I'm rubbish. Well,
also,
like,
because
someone's
like,
good at it.
Maybe I will, but maybe I'll also want to watch it. Like,
yeah.
Maybe I'll do both.
Well, I'm glad that you guys are falling on this side of the argument. So, with that, there's a Twitch streamer called Ninja who regularly gets over 100,000 people watching him play this game.
That's a lot of pressure, isn't it?
Concurrent. Yeah. But as in, and this is how he streamed with Drake.
Yeah. So Drake jumped on, didn't he?
Yes, but
Drake's a rapper.
Don't patronise me.
And so Twitch now has a huge propensity to spread the word about a game, because if you can watch a game for a while, you think it looks fun. And Twitch have been very good at this. Also owned by Amazon, by the way.
I was wondering.
And now sort of like, although Fortnite is free on Twitch, if you're watching a game, just under it is a link to buy it. So they've kind of turned this in very well.
This is sometimes in the past, streaming platforms have had people saying you can't play our game unless you talk over it or whatever. You can't just show gameplay from a game. I think that's mostly been a thing on maybe YouTube.
Yes, though, yes. It has been a bit on Twitch in the past. I think publishers are beginning to get their heads around it. Nintendo was very bad about that for a while. And there were a few other. There were one of the Final Fantasy 15 had some funniness around it.
Yeah, Persona as well.
Persona 5. Yeah. So it sort of used to happen a lot, especially Nintendo with a big one. They would issue takedown notices to YouTubers all over the place. And I think have now got their heads around it that it is free advertising and it drives people to their games. And you know, I mean, the fear was that people will watch a game be played and then feel they don't need to buy it themselves.
Yeah.
Especially for a narrative game, if you watch someone play through the whole story.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
Yeah,
it doesn't make sense if it's a battle royale or a sports game.
Yeah,
because the content there is your interactions with other players and or playing with your friends to do it. Persona had some very weird where you're allowed to play up to a certain point in the game, and then you weren't allowed to play past that. But a load of streamers were like, "Yeah, mate, all right," and just kept playing. to just for this sort of, you know.
Yeah,
sticking it to the man, if nothing else, really. But
yeah, I think Fortnite's reliance on Twitch puts it in an interesting place in terms of it being a craze, because obviously the streamers are driven by their audience in part. They'll play Fortnite for as long as they think they have an audience you want to watch them play Fortnite. But equally, these are tastemakers, and at some point they're going to feel like they need to do something different, and they'll move on to some other game. And if there is that point where there's an exodus of the top streamers onto some new title or various other new titles, that could be a thing that tips it, because if the big streamers stop playing Fortnite, suddenly there's just a lot less attention on it. And so it's the first time we've really seen a game be this reliant on Twitch for at least to drive its initial success. And it'll be curious to see what happens if the Twitch audience moves on.
Yeah, interestingly enough, I mean, along that vein, you're now having publishers sponsoring streamers to play their games. So last night, for example, specifically, Battlefield 5 will be launching in a few months. I went on Twitch last night. Almost all the streamers I'm following, all the biggest streamers on Twitch, were all playing in the same game of Battlefield 5, which was quite interesting to watch because you could jump between streamers and see them interact and sort of kill each other. And it was quite an interesting thing.
That's just smart.
It is. And also, these streamers are getting sponsored by PC makers, components, things like Corsair, but also Monster Energy. I was watching a streamer joke that he's a co-worker of Tiger Woods because they're both sponsored by Monster Energy.
I am going to have to call a halt to this fairly soon because we're running out of time. Quick question then. Battle Royale or Royale with cheese? I came up with that while we were talking. I'm really close to that.
It's not obvious.
Is it not obvious?
No.
What do you mean it's not obvious?
It's not obvious that you came up with it about 3 seconds ago.
All right, you go first then.
Fortnite or football's coming home?
All right, you can choose any of those four options. Battle Royale, Royale with cheese, Fortnite, or Football's Coming Home. Scott?
Obviously, Football's Coming Home.
You're such a weird man. Sean?
I like the whole scene because I'm a giant nerd, probably more than the rest of you, so we're going Fortnite.
And Dom?
I'm going to pity David and go Royale with cheese.
Yeah, Royale with cheese, me too. Okay, that's it for this week. We'll be back next week on the UK Tech Weekly podcast with more informed opinion on the hottest topics in tech. Until then, say goodbye, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.